This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, for those anytime easy drinking occasions.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team is on the way back. A College World Series title. The Bomb Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
All right, 877-377-6963 is the number to call or text in. Let's go to Danny first. Danny is in Russellville. Danny, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys. What a great atmosphere last night.
Yeah.
Honestly, I was so exhausted after that game. I mean, the fans gave it all. I mean, they were in the game. The fans gave it all. I mean, Bruce Pearl sweating like a pig. We had it right there for the taking. Just couldn't knock down free throws. I believe the turning point of the game, we were up 9 or 11, and Adriel Bailey missed two.
Yep.
And that was, I turned to my son, I said, uh-oh, that's not good. And we proceeded to give that 11-point lead up. And it was frustrating. It was really frustrating. I know Eric Musselman, he can't stand it because they're losing home games. I can't stand it. Losing home games before great crowds, it just can't happen. And it's been happening. But, again, free throw shooting, almost every game we've lost this year, we shot free throws not good. So, You know, what can you do? Auburn made theirs. They started out bad, but down the stretch, they made their free throws. And, guys, today's signing day should be summer rolling in pretty soon. So keep us abreast of what's going on, and have a good day.
Yep. Thanks, Danny.
Yeah, that stretch you're talking about there, Danny, Arkansas was up 65-54 with 5:59 to go. Auburn gets a three from McCormick to make it 65-57. Then Bailey draws the foul and goes 0-for-2 at the line. Mm-hmm. And you needed that answer. And then so it stays at 8. Then Auburn comes down, gets a free throw, makes it 7. Arkansas gets a free throw on a 1-2 from Jones. And you're exactly right. I thought the same thing in that moment with 5 to go. Well, those are two big free throws right there.
Got a text from Dwayne in Muldrow, Tommy. He said he knew that they were going to lose when Coach Z counted us with 17 wins with 7 minutes left. Now, I wasn't listening to the radio broadcast because I was there, but I don't know if he said that or not. I'm just going by what Dwayne in Muldrow says. But, again, I had several people text me last night, and don't count your chickens before they hatch. That's a bad idea. Don't put the cart before the horse, even if it looks like – and this doesn't apply to just Arkansas sports, but – always, if you're going to text something, if you're going to put something on social media, make sure to do that after the game is concluded. All right, let's go back to the flow lines. Garen is in Bella Vista. Garen, what's going on this morning, man?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Not too bad.
All right, good morning to you. And I got to say, I watched the game from beginning to end last night, and, man, it was a heartbreaker, to say the least. I mean, you're looking at it, and when you went up by 11, you just knew, okay, we're going to do it. We're going to close this thing out. And to watch it fall apart, it was heart-wrenching. But I got to say that this and a couple games before, it was close. And for the life of me, trying to understand some of the last plays that were drawn up, I don't know if it was the coach, the way he designed them, or their execution, or to be honest, it was probably both. They just, like, they didn't know exactly what they wanted to do. You couldn't really look at it and say, oh, I see what they were trying to do, and it would have worked. It was like they just let the pressure get to them and just couldn't execute. It's like they felt the weight of the game on them, and it just crumbled right there at the end. And I think that's something that they really do need to work on,
Garen,
as well as the free-throw shooting.
Garen, do you think it's because it's pretty obvious? And I was wondering the same thing, because Arkansas's had a couple of end-of-game situations, and particularly with Isaiah Joe out, is it maybe as simple as, you know, you got to get it to Mason Jones, so it's a lot easier for your opponent, and last night Bruce Pearl, to defense that up, so it's harder to execute. That's what I was thinking. I went back and rewound it and watched it a few times, and I mean, you know exactly. Now they kicked it out to Jalen Harris there, who made the big three with a couple minutes to go in the game at Alabama. But I think some of it is Arkansas's just limited on who you want to give it to in an end of game situation, and it's just it's easy for the other team to maybe draw up a play defensively to shut you down and make you look bad.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it, but also you got to know if that's what you know that's what the other teams want to do. So you got to make your off the ball screens. You got to make your plays designed to where you get somebody open. Don't just stand around over in the corner or way back out of the play and just stand there and wait for something to happen. Wait for somebody else to do something. If you send your off ball screens, you pick and move. You make the defense react to what you're doing. Don't make it easy for them by just standing around. Then that makes your number one guy more of an option.
Yeah,
it gives him more to work with.
Yeah. I thought Jalen's shot at the end of regulation was a good look. That's a shot
he's open.
He's good look. I mean, nearly went in.
Mason Ray made the right play. And we actually, if we want to play the audio for that, I got that pulled up on our B bar here, Tommy. So at the end of the basketball game, Garen, appreciate the call, man. Thanks for calling in this morning. So at the end of the basketball game, Jalen Harris got a, excuse me, the end of regulation, Jalen Harris got a look. And from Mason's vantage point, he looked like he was in. Here is Mason Jones on the final play and what happened.
No, I was just trying to make the best play for the team. I was dribbling down the left side, and two people came, and I seen Jalen Harris wide open, and I passed it to him. I trust all my teammates, and I'm never a selfish player where I feel like I have to take the shot. No, I saw Jalen Harris wide open. I trust him as he trusts me, so I wanted to give him the shot at the game, and he had a good look. It rattled in and out, but we went to overtime. So at the end of the game, it was a very good look. That I think.
So he finished 0-for-5, and I'm speaking towards Jalen Harris last night from the 3-point line, which Tommy, you mentioned he's the one that hit that big shot in the Alabama game. Yeah. If you remember,
it went end of game, but it was about two minutes, about two twelve or something like that to go. Yeah.
So if you remember watching that game,
almost from the same spot on the floor.
Yeah, very similar spot. Jimmy Witt has the ball. He kind of gets double teamed. Petty's just kind of sitting in the lane. And Mason Jones is like pointing at Jalen Harris because he came him like a back or an off the ball screen, and he hits him, and Jalen drills it. It wasn't Jalen's night last night from shooting the 3-point or just in general. He goes 2-for-9, 0-for-5, but that's the right basketball play.
Yeah, and it's a good look, and it nearly went in. I thought Mason Jones' shot at the end of overtime. It was well defended. That seemed like a forced shot, and it nearly went in, but it wasn't. It wasn't the kind of look I think Mason Jones wants,
but
obviously.
He's off balance.
He just kind of threw it up at the basket.
I think O'Curl was the one draped all over. Right. But that situation, it was just so tough. But, I mean, you got an open look at the end of the game against the number 11 team in the country. I know the
look was good, but it was well defended. He just didn't have the free shot you'd like to have.
The one thing that I questioned that Bob asked Muss last night. Why is Mason bringing the ball up the floor? That's the one thing I'd say. I'd run him off staggered screens. And again,
But he's talked about this yet. Remember the clip we played yesterday where he said he starts out more in the four, then he morphs to the point as the game goes on.
And that's true. But I'm talking about in the end of game situation where, outside of your big man, Mason is the slowest guard / shooting forward on the floor, right? Like of Jimmy, of Jalen, of Desi, he's the slowest on the floor. That doesn't mean he can't get to the rim and stuff, but I would have thought and must address this last night. And they still, I mean, you got a great look out of it. You had a chance to win the game at the end, just like you had a chance to win the game at LSU. Much better look last night than you got in the LSU game. But I was just wondering why not let Desi or Jalen run up the floor with the ball and try and get Mason off a staggered screen. But the reasoning, I guess, behind that, because you want Mason to have a ball. There was a chance that if he would have not had the ball bringing up the floor, then he wouldn't have had an opportunity to either make a play for a teammate or get a shot off. And so he made a play for a teammate. The teammate didn't convert. But I think Mason Jones, and you heard it, he touched on it. I asked him last night, I was like, from your vantage point, did it look like it was going in? He said, yes, it rattled in and out. I mean, it was a close shot. It wasn't like a jack three like the –
You're talking about Jalen Harris's shot at the end of regulation.
It was a good look.
If it goes in, we're having obviously a much different conversation this morning. So. And it nearly went down.
Mm-hmm. And it looked good. Like, and it, obviously the angle that the media members are set at from our position, it looked like it was going in. It didn't, though. So so we were talking about plays and kind of the designs down the stretch. One of the things Muss has done, Garen, late in ball games when Arkansas has had a lead, is kind of not four corners Dean Smith, but he's really slowed down the pace of the game where they really don't get a set going until about 10 minutes of the shot clock. And I'm wondering if he did that a little early last night, because it looked like he was doing that with about 6 or 7 minutes to go in the game.
And was that so much to take time off the clock or to rest his team? Because I was thinking that when – is he trying to take the air out of the ball here and limit possessions for Auburn? Or is he trying to rest his team that you can see is slowing down, you know, that appears to be, you know, the fuel range light is on.
Yeah.
You know, they're under 50 miles to go. You need to find a gas station. It looked like a team to me that was running a little low on fuel last night. So I didn't know if they were doing that to save themselves or to limit possessions. The answer is probably both.
The effort was there. I mean, the intensity was there, but it's time to move on to Missouri, Tommy.
I mean, I'm thinking about Missouri right now and, you know, how are we going to beat them and what's our defensive game plan going to be? I'm concerned every night. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say I'm any more concerned tonight than I was 2 nights ago or 8. I'm concerned every game on our preparation and trying to get the guys ready to play.
So even after wins, obviously he's a lot happier in press conference after wins like everyone else is. But he mentions, regardless win or lose, he always mentions the next team. Yes, he gets questions related to the previous game, but you can't really do anything about that now. Now it's about Saturday in Columbia and what you can do against the Missouri Tigers.
Yeah, and this game's huge because now you're a game below 500 in the league.
Mm-hmm.
You're falling fast in the standings. You've got to start getting wins. As I mentioned earlier in the hour, you got to beat Missouri because A, you got to get back to 500 in this league, but B, you can't afford to have a loss to Missouri on your tournament resume.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just that simple. So you got to get this win just because of that reason, but you got to get back to 500. There's a lot of reasons you got to win this game. I'm not going to say it's a must win, but if you want to be in the NCAA tournament, this is a game you can't lose. I won't call it a must win, but it's a can't lose just because of where Missouri's at, the kind of season they're having, where they're at in the league standings. You got to go on a little bit of a streak here, man. You got back-to-back road games coming up. You play Missouri Saturday. Then you go to Tennessee on Tuesday, and those are games. I think you got to find a way. If you're going to lose at home like you've lost at home, you better find a way to win them on the road.
Brandon Paris texted in, we need one more stud that can score, or at least Jimmy needs to keep showing up. That was the difference in the game. Weird game for Jimmy Witt. You mentioned a lot of it probably had to do with the minutes he's been playing. He does not score a single point last night. I think that's his only 0-for this season. He goes 0-for-7, still gives you 40 minutes, gives you 7 rebounds. And I know people always look to points first, but his defensive effort is always there. I don't think in the previous press conference on Monday mentioned anything about his injury that he talked about last week. We don't. I'm assuming he's not fully healthy with the nerve or whatever, 100%. But it was odd for. I mean, it's still to be within 3 points in an OT when you're at this point second best player because Isaiah Joe is injured to have 0 points. I mean, that just says something about your basketball
team. He took 7 shots. He obviously didn't make any of them. Played 40 minutes out of the 45 last night. So, it's just surprising the way he played. He gave you 7 rebounds too. So let's, you know, that was important for Arkansas. But I don't say. I mean, I'm not about to come in here and say Jimmy Witt not scoring is the reason you lost. But if Jimmy Witt just gives you 8 or 10 points, that's probably the difference in the game. Now the question is, if Jimmy Witt gives you 8 or 10, is Mason Jones still at 40? I don't know. I just think those two guys for Arkansas to win a game like last night got to be like, with particularly with Isaiah Joe out, combined for 50-something.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't last night.
I got to give Clay Henry credit for this net statistic. I was going to come out. He came up to me after the game concluded last night and pointed out Arkansas started 10 of 17 from 3, Tommy. They missed their last 8.
Yeah.
I mean, they just – and you know what that is? It's legs. It's tiredness. And Muss talked in the press conference, no excuses, no excuses. We can make excuses as radio hosts because we're not coaches. Well,
are these excuses or reasons?
Excuses are like, you know what, everyone has one, but at the end of the day, it's not necessarily just an excuse. It's, hey, this is what you're having to deal with as the head basketball coach of the University of Arkansas, the roster you inherited, plus the how you go about things when an injury to your best player. And I think, is there a debate now who the best player is on the team?
Nope.
The way Mason Jones?
Nope. It's over.
So who is it? You think it's Mason Jones?
Yeah.
Okay. Is that not too much what you've done for me lately? Are you not getting locked in on what you've seen lately? Because Isaiah Joe is the better NBA prospect.
Isaiah Joe, well, first of all, this team's going to have to live without Isaiah Joe for the next couple of weeks, correct, 3 weeks, whatever it is.
And Mason has been shot. By the way, Mason Jones, the first Razorback player in the history of the program to have 3-plus 30-point outings, three straight ones.
And this, Andy Kennedy mentioned this, and Tom Hart, who was fun to listen to last night when I went back and watched the game when I got home. Maybe we'll have a clip from that because there was a really funny moment early in the second half. But, you know, Tom Hart referenced this, and yeah, Mason Jones did something that Sidney Moncrief didn't do, Ron Brewer didn't do, Marvin Delph didn't do, Todd Day, Lee Mayberry,
Corliss,
Scotty. You just keep going. Ron Jr., Joe Johnson. Who else do we need to make sure gets thrown into
Bobby
this?
Bobby P., Barford, Pat Bradley. Bradley.
Just keep going. Nobody else has had 30-plus three in a row. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing. He isn't doing this in November against Norfolk State, North Dakota State, Indiana State. This is three league games in a row. So
that's impressive.
That's the other thing that needs to be noted about this is who he did it against.
You know who else was impressed last night? Bruce Pearl.
How good is Mason Jones? Wow, what a story. He is just a great lesson for young people. Now where you start, it's where you finish, better than himself. He's as good as there is in the league.
So I remember you telling me a couple months back how Bruce Pearl kind of locks in the attention of whatever room he in. I enjoyed listening to him. He only talked for 5 or so minutes in the postgame press conference last night. But that statement that you just heard, and I cut out some of the pauses and breaks because he was tired and that's just how he talked, but it immediately sucked me in. He gave so much credit to Mason Jones compared to where he started. I believe Mason told us he was 265 coming out of high school. Went to, I'm going to butcher this again, Connors State.
Okay, Warner, Oklahoma.
And then
junior college.
Comes to Arkansas.
I watched him a few times, worked, you know, officiated some of those games, watched him, good player there, but I never in my wildest dreams in the games I saw him play thought he would turn into the player he's become at Arkansas. It's been an amazing transformation from where he was just a few years ago.
Must touched on that in the press conference on Monday, saying that he was one of the guys that was more consistent about getting up at 6 a.m., going to shoot, and he's really improved. You've seen it this year. I know he's had some games where he's turned the ball over, but his ball handling and just getting to the rack. There's comparisons. You can look at like an Antoine Walker, Paul Pierce, and I know those are a little lofty, but he's able to be so crafty. He's got a great pump fake, Tommy, and a great jab step. His jab step is awesome. I love watching him play and get, like, he creates space. He separates himself. He's just a fun basketball player to watch.
You mentioned he was 265 coming out of high school.
I'm pretty sure that's what he was.
If that's right. He mentioned the other night on the radio show Monday night, Eric Musselman Live, he's playing right now at about 204. Then last year he's playing at about 215.
Yeah, 215.
Last year at 215, he's cut weight from last year. And you just think about the jump. I mean, we talk about the jump from high school to junior college to here. Just think about the jump from last year to now. I mean, give Musselman and the staff credit, but I mean, you got to give the credit to, no one can lose the weight for you. No one can get up and shoot at 6 a.m. for you. Mason Jones has done all of that for himself. So, I mean, the credit lies at his feet for, as Coach said, putting in the work.
Mm-hmm. And Mason's talked about a lot of his improvement. Also, is credit to Eric Musselman and Mus pushing him day in, day out. Right, let's go back to the phone lines, 877-377-6963. Let's go to Homie in Greenwood. Homie, what did you think of the game last night, man?
Hi, guys. How's things going this morning?
Man, not too bad.
Wish they'd have won.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wish I could have done my first morning rush coming off a hog win, but what can you do, man?
Yeah, that would have been great, I guarantee you. Hey, guys, we're talking about Mason Jones doing that, to get 33 in a row. Nobody's ever done that before, correct?
Correct. Three straight 30-point performances.
30 games,
Jones.
Three in a row.
We're talking about Super Sid. Who else? Todd Day. Who else we got?
Guy named Corliss that played up there.
Yeah, old
Nancy.
Yeah. Hey, what is different about this team that Jones is on and the team them fellas was on? And I'm going to get y'all's opinion. Hang up and listen.
Homie, appreciate the call, man. Well, first off, there's two Hall of Famer coaches. We don't know if Buss is a Hall of Famer yet, both Eddie Sutton and Nolan Richardson. Second, the talent surrounding some of the guys we listed off, I think, is a little, just a tiny bit better than Mason's teammates.
Yep. So. And Justin messaged into the show on, he's watching on YouTube this morning, said, hey, Mason Jones has to go for 30 because Arkansas has limited offensive weapons. And that's a great point, Justin. I mean, one reason Mason Jones is scoring 30, because he has to score 30. Because, you know, a lot of nights it's Jimmy Witt or him or Isaiah Joe. There's not triplets right now. And maybe if it had a healthy Isaiah Joe, an on-point Jimmy Witt last night to go with Mason Jones, they win the game.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, available in black cherry, strawberry, lemon lime, and mango.
Give is to Alex Collins, straight up the middle, and Collins on the run. They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house. Touchdown, Arkansas, 80 yards.
Richard, you're going to be in the River Valley tomorrow. I know rabid Razorback fans that want to keep up with the recruiting are anticipating tomorrow hearing from you, and you'll be in Fort Smith tomorrow to tell us about all the news that's happening right now.
Yeah, absolutely, and I look forward to it. Thanks for the invite, and I always like getting back to Fort Smith and seeing some familiar faces and some faces I haven't seen before.
So, Richard, we've been talking a little bit of National Signing Day this morning, the commits, whether it's you, whether it's Nicky with Stanley. We're just trying to get the intel out as quick as possible. As of now, all 8 commits have signed. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. And now you're waiting on some guys that are not committed to, make their announcements. Really, 3 of them. Marcus Henderson, the offensive lineman from Memphis, who's down to Arkansas and Ole Miss. And he's going to announce between 9 and 9:30. Anticipate him being a Razorback. Malik Hornsby, the running back from Missouri City, Texas, a ESPN 4-star, number 9 dual threat quarterback in the country. He's going to announce on ESPNU at 2:30. Expect him to be a Razorback. Jalen St. John, offensive lineman from St. Louis, Trinity Catholic. He's supposed to announce at 2 o'clock live on Twitter. Expect him to be a Razorback. Savion Williams, receiver from Marshall, Texas, who was committed to Arkansas under Coach Chad Morris, is going to announce probably in about 30 minutes or so. And it looks like he's going to end up at TCU. Then earlier, Alan Horst, the tight end that was an old Arkansas commitment, did what I think most anticipated. He ended up signing with UT San Antonio, where Jeff Traylor and Barry Lenny Jr. are.
So who's the biggest get? Who are you most surprised by that you think Arkansas is going to end up with in this signing class, Richard?
You know, I'll be honest with you. I'm not that surprised by anybody. I mean, as far as being really surprised, came out of left field, probably nobody, really. I thought that Arkansas had a shot at most of the guys that the they've gotten and the kids that I think they're going to get. So I'm not gonna be surprised by any of it, to be honest with you.
I mean, for the lack of numbers they have in this class, they've made up, I guess, if you want to find the silver lining, in the quality and the number of 4-stars they have in this class. You had a tweet about a half hour ago about comparing it to the 2018 class that had 17 prospects and included 3 4-stars. And then you said, as of now, 15 signees and 3 4-stars in this class. So the quality for what you're getting, I guess the bang for your buck is there with what they've done so far.
No, you're right, Tommy. I mean, that's the impressive part. You know, Coach Morris, the first year of the early signing period, they only signed 17 kids. And like you said, 3 4-stars. And so right now, currently they have 3 4-stars and 17 signees. And I think with Henderson and Hornsby, that would be 5, and all 5 of those would be ESPN 300 prospects. And none of the 3 4-stars in the 2017 class were 300 ESPN 300 prospects, which means the top 300 in the country.
Yeah. We ask and we spend all of our time today, and we'll spend 98% of our time on Arkansas recruiting, but let me spend the other 2% right here on this one question. A lot of other kids are going to sign a lot of other places around our state, both in-state, Division II schools, smaller schools, other Division I schools around the country. And a lot of times those stories get lost today in the traditional media around our state. What's maybe the best signing story or the one that needs to be noted the most? Because I think a lot of times if you don't sign with Arkansas in the state, you get lost in the news of the day. But we forget that there's a lot of other players that have either already signed in the early signing period or will sign today that just won't be Razorbacks.
No, and we'll have a full list of that in tomorrow's paper of all the kids that signed throughout the state. But, you know, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but probably going to be around 25 to 30 kids signed Division I letters of intent throughout the state. I know North Little Rock has a kid going to SMU. El Dorado has a kid going to SMU. Brandon Thomas from North Little Rock going to Memphis. So they're kind of scattered out, but you're going to see a pretty good and pretty impressive list. Probably about the normal amount of kids that sign with Division I schools, in an average year at Arkansas.
Yeah, a lot of parents there, they can buy a boat with that college fund now. So.
That's what they're going to spend it on.
I can buy a boat.
I wish I would have helped out my dad. I got some scholarship up, but not a full ride. We're talking with Richard Davenport, Arkansas football recruiting here on the Morning Rush. Richard, to kind of go off Tommy's point, but to get it back with Arkansas, there's some kids, 2 stars, lower 3 stars, that Arkansas fans are excited about but may not know a lot about because they don't have that 4 next to their name. Who's the kid in this class right now that you consider the diamond in the rough?
If I had to pick one, it would be Jaquelin McGee from Fort Valley, Georgia, Peach County High School. He's 6'4", 255, 260 pounds. He's only played football for 2 years. He played defensive end this past 2 seasons, but I think he'll probably move in, probably be about 290, 300 at Arkansas, move inside, excuse me. And he's got excellent speed. Very, very good athleticism. He used to play basketball, thought he was going to be a basketball player. Then he tried football, and lo and behold, he's pretty good at it. And I think he's just scratching the surface. Obviously, when you've only played a sport for a couple of seasons, you're behind in a lot of ways, fundamentally sound technique and things of that nature. And also with him playing basketball for so long, I'm not so sure how much weight training he did. I'm sure he did some, but in football, obviously, that's more intensified. And now he'll be able to get to Fayetteville this summer and go through off season the next few years and get much stronger. But if there was one guy that athleticism, potential, upside, I'd say him.
How big of a deal is it that Arkansas has a defensive coordinator in Barry Odom that Missouri's not getting blue chippers? They're kind of in a situation like Arkansas where they're not getting all 4 and 5 stars, but the defense was there. The development was there. How key is that on the defensive side that needs rebuilding? They have a coach that's kind of coached in a similar situation to coaching up in Fayetteville.
No, you're right. I think that's key, and I don't think that's something that you necessarily have seen over the last few years, where you saw a kid make a big jump or something from one year to another. I mean, some kids, you know, improve, but not to the point where you're like, wow, where did that come from? I mean, he's really elevated from 1 year to the next, or in 2 years. And I think with the philosophy that Coach Barry Odom brings, and his background and as a defensive coordinator, and also I'm hearing, you know, and you always hear it with strength and conditioning coaches. A new strength and conditioning coach comes in, and you hear a lot of good things. But in talking to a lot of people, you know, you hear this is an SEC type strength and conditioning program, philosophy, work ethic. Yeah, the kids are really excited about what the new staff, as far as strength and conditioning, are doing right now, and some of the more difficult workouts that they've ever encountered. I think the first weekend that they came back from break, I mean, there was a lot of kids getting sick from the workout. And, you know, that's not unusual, but a lot of them were puking and it was a lot of kids saying that it was the most difficult workout that they've ever encountered.
Richard Davenport with us here on National Signing Day. All right, let's go back through the numbers. You mentioned 17 are going to sign earlier. You can sign up to 25. Explain to the audience what happens with the other scholarships. How does that work moving forward, and how do you think Sam Pittman will utilize those down the road for the program?
Well, if they add the three kids that I anticipate that they'll add, they'll finish right around 20, unless there's one that's not necessarily expected. But then you got the graduate transfers that are coming. You know, obviously Felipe Franks and Jerry Jacobs, quarterback and cornerback, are on campus. Levi Draper, who committed yesterday, mm-hmm. The linebacker from Oklahoma, he'll graduate later this spring and report to Fayetteville in the summer. So that's three. Then I anticipate Xavier Kelly, the defensive lineman from Clemson, who made an official visit to Arkansas over the weekend. I anticipate him coming. So that's four. So, you know, I don't know. I'm not going to lie to you. I don't know the exact number as far as the 85. But, you know, obviously you can sign 25 in a recruiting class. But I don't know the total number as far as the 85, and I don't know where that is right now, but it looks like they'll finish up with about 20 as far as national letters of intent.
Richard Davenport with us here on the Morning Rush. I guess, Richard, one last stop before we close you out here. When talking about numbers and stuff and where they're going to end up with as far as the signees and that, if you had to calculate where this class ends up in the SEC – in the NCAA, I know that there's different recruiting services and different ones. Where do you think it ends up comparatively in the Southeastern Conference and just the NCAA overall?
Well, right now, the class, Chad Morris's class with 17 signees, finished number 51 in the country, according to ESPN. I looked earlier today, and Arkansas was at number 44. I'm just guessing it could maybe break the top 40. I don't know what the other services will show, but I think, you know, if you're able to do that and, you know, get near 40, you know, considering the early signing period and the disadvantages that a new coaching staff endures, I think that's a good accomplishment. And Coach Pittman said that from the very beginning. You know, he wanted to finish as strong as they could, obviously. But you had so many limitations with the vast majority of prospects signing in the early signing period, and you only had basically a week to sign nine in the first signing period. So you really, your talent pool was diminished. So you do what you can here, and they're going to start working. They're not going to take any time off. Usually you take a week off after National Signing Day. Mm-hmm. They're not going to take any time off. They're going to strictly go to work on the 21 and 22 classes.
Always working, always working. That's Sam Pittman and his staff here at the University of Arkansas. Richard Davenport of Whole Hog Sports and the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. You can follow him on Twitter at AR Recruiting Guide. Richard, I know you're busy today, man, so thanks for carving out some time for us this morning.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me. See you tomorrow.
All right, I told Tommy before the break, I'm starting to get a little hungry.
Yep. And always that time, about this time of day.
It's really, come on, man. It's every time of the day. And I'm always thinking about Sassy's up there in Fayetteville. Two great locations on Weddington and on College. We haven't talked about the chicken fried steak yet. Have you had their chicken fried steak, Tommy?
I have not had the chicken fried steak.
It's dynamite. It is fantastic.
Generally, when I go to Sassy's, I want smoked meat. So tell me about the chicken fried steak.
So the chicken fried steak is just, it's been a while because I've typically got the wings the last couple times I've gone there.
Which wings do you like there?
The honey sriracha.
Oh, that's the only way to go.
To go to. So, and I like their hot ones, but the honey sriracha, when you combine a little sweet, a little spicy, it is fantastic. But this chicken fried steak.
Perfection on a plate.
Yeah. This chicken fried steak, man, it comes out hot. And I'm a guy that gets gravy on everything, my green beans, my mashed potatoes. So I'm just like, dump the gravy on everything. I haven't got a special named after me, though. I'm going to have
to
talk
to... You got to earn that.
Yeah, I got to earn
Alan's
it.
Not, Alan doesn't just hand those out.
Yeah.
Neighbor's just kind of named one after himself.
Yeah. I don't want to do that.
So you can do that. You go that
way. No,
route.
I don't... So that's like a nickname. If you name a nickname after yourself, that's just... That's not a good look, Tom.
And the barbecue nachos are good, but... So you want the chicken fried steak?
Man, I love those wings. If I was going to have something named after me, the honey sriracha wings, but yeah. I got a long way to go. Again, two locations up in Fayetteville, Sassy's Red House on College, and then Sassy's Barbecue and Grill on Weddington. And again, Eric Musselman's show is on there on Monday nights at the Red House location. Yep. Initially was at the Barbecue and Grill location, but now it's at the Red House
First
location.
Half of the year they spend at the new one. It's on Steamboat just off Weddington, and then the rest of the year, it is at the original Red House there on College.
So I thought it was an interesting last tidbit from Richard talking about how they're not taking a week off after this. Like, naturally, you think about how much time and energy and effort this coaching staff has put in. And I think the best comparison you have is the fact that in Chad Morris's first class, and I know it's not necessarily an apples to oranges argument, but it's comparable in the certain sense that his first recruiting class, not his full cycle when they ended up like mid-20s, but the first one when he first got in ended up like, what, 60-something? It wasn't great. These guys are probably going to get you inside the top 50, maybe top 40. Probably not top 30. Yeah,
no, not top 30.
But that just goes to show you they're staying at the links right now still, I think. They're not golfing. They're working, Tommy.
Yeah, and this is just a matter of you're starting behind the eight ball and you're trying to work your way out of this situation right now. And this is utilizing some of those relationships you had at Missouri of your Barry Odom, at Georgia of your Sam Pittman, and trying to utilize and leverage some recruits that you already had relationships built with and kids that want to play for you as their position coach, you as their coordinator, whatever the case may be. And they've made a few of those. They've kept a hold of a lot of the kids in state that they just want to be Razorbacks. They lost some of the kids from Texas that – you know, they came for Chad Morris or Jeff Traylor or whatever that connection was. But by this time next year, you're going to see those kids that they've got that connection to Sam Pittman and his staff. And all this thing needs is a little time. I think the seed's planted. They're watering it every day. They're tending to their garden. It just needs time and sunshine, man.
I mean, you got to like where it's going, move on. And again, the fact that you just love, as an Arkansan, to the folks listening, whether you work a blue-collar job, a white-collar job, this feels, even regardless of your line of work, it feels like a blue-collar state. So you appreciate the extra work put in. You appreciate when you have national analysts talking and being surprised at how your class is rounded out. You appreciate when you go above the standard, hey, we're going to do this and take a break after a national site. No. We're going to keep this thing going.
Well, no coach ever says, hey, we're going to go on vacation, you know, right after at a busy time of the year. So, I mean, coaches, as we found out in the Petrino scandal, coaches always give the perception they're working 28 hours a day. And we find out, well,
not necessarily.
Sometimes you're hanging out at Sonic, you know, but so.
Is that what they were doing?
Exactly. So
I learned what kicking boots was the other day. Bill taught me what kicking boots was on halftime yesterday. They're probably kicking boots.
Kicking boots, yeah, with Red Hots. So, you know, this is a situation where I think we can have higher expectations, obviously, than where we're at now. I don't know what the expectations are moving forward for recruiting as far as rank and placement in the SEC and particularly the West. So if you kill it next year and you do everything, where are you going to be? You're still going to be, what, at best, eighth or ninth in this league? At best, fifth in the division in recruiting?
Well, let me ask you something to this.
Because you're not going to beat out LSU, Alabama, LSU, A&M, Auburn. You know, you're not going to beat those four.
Okay, I'll play devil's advocate here. Did that hurt you in 2010, 2011 when you were in a similar position? Well, you had that great recruiting class, but it still wasn't top five in the SEC.
No, I'm not saying you. I'm just talking about recruiting results. I'm not talking about on-the-field results. I'm talking about recruiting rankings a year from now when we're sitting here doing this show on National Signing Day. What should our expectations be when Sam Pittman and his staff has had a full year to put in the work and we get a real result? Well, what we're seeing now is not a real result because they hadn't had time to do the real work. I'm just saying have realistic expectations because even then – they can have a better class and finish nationally in the low 20s, upper teens, but because of the nature of this conference and this division, you still may be fifth or sixth in the division, man.
The way I see it is Arkansas, we've talked about, you got to have a top 10 class to compete for a national championship.
I think more than one top 10 class.
That's probably not going to happen anytime soon with Arkansas.
Well, that's not the expectation.
Now, here's the crux of the argument, though. Development. I hear Ruskin talk about this all the time. The biggest thing for Arkansas is development. You're always going to need a developmental football coach, Tommy. Mm. Always. You can have a really good recruiter, but you're not going to get top five, top 10 classes at Arkansas. Basketball is one thing. Baseball is one thing. Unless we just have a complete changing of the guard across college football, you're probably not going to get a top five or top 10 class at Arkansas. And that's okay because you got to be able to develop players in practice and off the field. Yep. That's the biggest.
And in the weight room.
I agree 100% with Ruskin when he says that. Yeah, in the weight room. That's key too.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, gluten-free with no artificial flavors.
Now he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number three, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
All right, let's get into it. It's been a while since I've been a part of this. It's time to moan and complain a little bit, Tommy.
What is wrong with you?
I want to complain.
I'm complaining.
I want to complain about
complaining.
It really pisses me off today.
To simply listen to people whine and complain.
I'm angry. I'm spitting angry. I'm like a tornado of anger swirling about. My heart rate is dangerously high right now.
I'm complaining because not enough people tickle, hug, or smile.
I'm so mad I could eat ball bearings and crap BBs.
It's time for What's Your Beef Wednesday.
All right, it is a What's Your Beef Wednesday. If you want to get on the conversation, 877-377-6963 is the number to call or text in. We'll start it with JT in Hot Springs. His two beefs. People are getting on Musk for losses because they know nothing about the game. And your favorite, officials not making consistent calls throughout the entire game. Stop calling touch fouls on one end and not calling them on the other. Tommy, your retort to JT in Hot Springs.
You're right.
I'm not.
If that's his opinion, that's his opinion. Right. I don't sit here and everybody think he's just defending. I'm not defending. I just try to tell you what the rule is and why it's done the way it is.
Listen, don't let facts get in the way of a good story.
And that's the problem. Nobody wants to hear the facts of the situation. I've turned you a little bit over the last year and a half to understanding how the game is perceived and viewed from a rule book perspective. Most people don't want to hear it. And that's fine. That's fine.
I definitely have come to my senses a little bit, but when it comes down to it, I'm always going to side with the common fan over you, Tommy.
That's because fine. Because you want to be popular.
Yeah.
That's fine.
No. It's whatever.
Yeah.
Even though it goes against my
Listen, there were some things last night that I didn't agree with. You're not going to like them all, but not everyone's horrible. And that's the thing. Fans want to believe everyone that goes against your team is horrendous, horrible, and pre-calculated.
Well, that's not the case. It's not the case.
That's not the case.
So, only in football in 2009 when Mark Curl screws your team.
That was not a good call either.
Not a good call. Calls.
Well, are we talking about the one at Florida with Malcolm Shepard?
Yeah, Shepard, the Tim Tebow aberration first down, the phantom pass interference. Oh, I could keep going, but that's neither here nor there, as John would like to say. We don't have to go back to the past. So, Tommy, I'll let you go first. I got mine all geared up and ready to go, but I'll let you kick things off this morning.
Why is doing the right thing or doing what's good for you so expensive? Why does it always seem to be that way? That when you try to make the right decisions for your diet, your health, to better who you are as a person, finances always get in the way. Why is that?
Not your way.
They always get in the way. Contrary to your belief, I'm not made of money. My wife...
just expensive.
I love the fact that she is, since January, tried to make better choices about the kinds of food we buy. All right, so she has went on a real organic path of grocery shopping. And the kids have kind of bought in. I've kind of bought in when she's not looking. And it's worked out all right.
You mean you haven't bought in when she's not looking? The opposite.
Whatever. You know, might slide through Sonic every now and then. But it's happy hour. What are you going to do? You know. But why is it that when you try to eat healthy, the healthy stuff, the stuff that's good for you, is three times more expensive? Should it be the other way around? Everything else we try to do in life with laws, rules, regulations, everything else, if it's the wrong thing to do, we tax it more, like cigarettes and sodas and everything. You know, we got all these sin taxes. You know, we put all these extra taxes on things.
The alcohol tax.
Alcohol, another good one. But why is it when we try to, and they say, well, it's organic because it doesn't have all the chemicals. Well, then if you didn't spend any money on chemicals, why is it costing me more?
I guess it's cheaper to, I don't know.
I don't know. I understand why people are fat and unhealthy. It's cheaper.
I think I got a B in biology in college, so I can't like go so into the
I just cheaper. Got a my wife did the Walmart grocery pickup thing, and she said she always texts me the receipts so I can put them in the register and write them down. I'm one of the few people, yes, that still keep a check register in this country. She got like a half a basket of groceries is $80. You know, it's just amazing the difference in your grocery when you try to do the right things. I understand why our nation is full of people that are overweight, and I'm one of them. Proud American right here.
Here.
Why is it that shouldn't it be the opposite? We reward you to do the right things, to eat healthier. Instead, Twinkies are 99 cents a box, and if you want to get organic cucumbers, oh, that'll be $8, sir. That's just ridiculous.
I'm at a point.
I may have to get a fifth job just to afford this organic eating. I'm telling you, it's getting ridiculous.
Tommy always brings up it probably once or twice a month. Like, if you had your choice between being tall and thin for the rest of your life or giving $1 million on the spot, Tommy always says I'd be tall and thin.
Yeah, I mean, if you could just, if that was my choice, 6'4", you know, what would be a good weight at 6'4"? 6'4", 200, 8% body fat, built like a Greek god, and you can eat anything you want the rest of your life. Or, here's $1 million cash. Keep your cash.
Is there anyone you wish you looked like? I mean, you just gave the body type, but... is there a person, like, is there a celebrity or someone that you're like, oh, he's pulling out the glasses, folks.
Ty Richardson. Somebody's texting me. Somebody's either agreeing or hating me. So.
Got a beef from Tristan Fayetteville. He said, my beef is Hog fans that don't get their butt out of their seat and call the Hogs. I cannot stand those people.
And when they went up, what was it, 59-50 or whatever, up 9, I thought, before they hit 11, I thought the roof was coming off the place when Auburn called timeout. You could feel it coming through the TV. When the teams got to the huddle and they started calling the Hogs, man, they're getting ready to blow. And it wasn't even full last night. 17,100, whatever it was on the box score here. 17,196 was – that's sold tickets. So there's probably not even 17,000 in the building. But, boy, How did it sound in there? You were in there.
It was loud.
It wasn't as loud as Kentucky, though. No.
Props to the Arkansas fans for giving the team all they could handle, or all they could, all the help they could get on Tuesday night against Auburn. But you remember Marshawn Powell's dunk against Missouri a few years back, Tommy, where he just baptized that guy and they called an offensive foul. They did this. Reggie missed the dunk last night, but Reggie Chaney almost ended this guy's career last night. And I forget who.
And then he missed the dunk.
Yeah, he missed the dunk, which is a bummer. But the offensive.
You get the call if you make the dunk.
I think so. I think, or it's just
I think
no,
the whistle went off first.
I think a no call or something, but it's incredible. It would have been one of the best dunks in Bud Walton Arena history, and that's saying something. So I talked about it in the last segment. I know Tommy's not a big Bachelor guy. I know this is kind of a new wrinkle into the mix. Listen, people always give me a hard time because I occasionally enjoy a rom-com every once in a while, or I'll watch The Bachelor or something. First of all, I have three sisters.
By occasionally, he means weekly, folks.
Yeah. I have three sisters, so that's obviously had a wrinkle into it, and three stepsisters. My dad got remarried, and so that's kind of been an impact on my life.
Hang on,
and
so say that you got three
stepsisters. I call my sisters because I feel like step always has like a bad.
I was making sure that wasn't six.
No,
I was hearing that it's six. I was like, well, no one that explains what's wrong with you.
By the way, I got to meet my niece last night, little Eloise, for the first time, and it was funny. Last week in the hospital up in Fayetteville, their doctor went to the game, and like right as he left, instead of saying, "I hope you guys are okay, I hope everything goes well," he said, "Go Hawks," and then he walked out, which she told me, and I got the okay from Claire that I could share that story, but I thought that was great. They thought it was funny last night, but one of the, like, in terms of The Bachelor and stuff, there's one of the contestants on there. Her name's Madison Pruitt. She's an Auburn girl, an Auburn graduate. Her dad is actually an assistant. He's director, let's see, he is the director of operations for Bruce Pearl and the Auburn basketball team.
Is he the guy in charge of the lunch meat under the seat? Or
that was weird. Yeah. That was very weird. I don't know if you guys saw that, but at like a GA or something was like feeding Bruce Pearl in the Kentucky game, right? It was the most odd thing. It was one of the most odd things I've ever seen. But my beef, Tommy, is with myself because I have this love affinity for Madison Pruitt. And I didn't ask her dad for permission to marry her last night. So I'm a coward. I shied away from my moment. I'm hoping she comes to Nashville, Tennessee for the SEC tournament so I can at least ask to
so
get a
get
picture
your heart
with
broke
her.
There?
Yeah, get my heart broken. That's the only time I will ever say War Eagle is if I get a picture with her. For those who don't know, just Google her. She's probably one of the most beautiful women I've ever seen in my entire life. And she's sweet. She's the only contestant on The Bachelor that hasn't ticked the other girls off. So you like that.
You don't know till you ask.
Yeah, exactly. You got to shoot your shot, right?
All they can see. Exactly. You got to take your shot.
I know Miss Laura probably turned you down 10 times before and she finally accepted. But
lucky her.
Yeah. Oh, God. It paid off.
Yeah.
It's like we say.
Look at her now.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Bud Light Seltzer, 5% ABV and only 100 calories. We'd put it up against any other seltzer out there.